Greetings. Welcome to Native Sun, the show for Indigenous issues on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. The first article I have for you today, Murkowski says, "We're not going to let tribal programs suffer." This was written by Stuart Huntington of ICT and published on the 12th of March, 2025. The Trump administration's moves to dramatically cut government spending have left much of Indian country on edge, with tribal communities dependent on billions of dollars in federal funding, and the Republican majorities in Congress largely standing by the president. Effective voices for tribes in the nation's capital can seem elusive, but don't tell that to Senator Lisa Murkowski, the Alaska Republican who chairs the Senate Indian Affairs Committee. "We've got to figure out a way to work with the folks in the administration," she told ICT. "We're not going to let our tribal programs and our tribal citizens suffer." Last year, $32.6 billion was approved by Congress to benefit tribal communities for programs including education, health care, law enforcement, and more, according to the U.S. General Accounting Office. Murkowski emerged at the dawn of President Donald Trump's second term in office as a vocal advocate for Native nations when Trump began announcing cuts and executive orders impacting tribal communities. On his first day back in office, Trump signed an executive order eliminating diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, programs in federal agencies. "I worked very, very quickly to make sure the administration knew that the DEI executive order should have nothing to do with tribes or tribal programs, because the relationship that the government has with tribes is based on political status, not on racial status," Murkowski said. Another day one executive order also riled Murkowski, who has been elected to the Senate four times. Trump ordered the name of the country's tallest mountain, Alaska's Mount Denali, be renamed Mount McKinley, after the country's 25th president. "We feel very strongly in Alaska about the Koyukon Athabascan name that was given to Denali generations, centuries ago," Murkowski said. "Denali means the Great One, and if you've ever seen this extraordinary mountain, you would agree it should be named the Great One. It should be recognized as Denali." Murkowski has introduced a bill in the Senate, co-sponsored by Alaska Republican Senator Dan Sullivan, that would officially name the peak Denali. Last month, both chambers of the Alaska State Legislature passed a resolution urging the President, Secretary of the Interior, and the U.S. Board on Geographic Names to maintain the name Denali. Pondering the current kerfuffle, Murkowski said she found it interesting the President's order renaming the mountain is titled "Restoring Names That Honor American Greatness." "Let's think about American greatness," she said. "Why would we not want to honor and recognize the greatness of the indigenous peoples who have stewarded this area, this region, this land for centuries? It's important not only to maintain the traditional name that the Athabascan people have given this mountain, but also respect the native people and the stewardship they have had in this region." Last week, Murkowski's committee unanimously approved and sent to the full Senate 25 bills that are very keen priorities in all or parts of Indian country, including land and water rights in tribal communities, and a bill that would establish a Truth and Healing Commission on Indian boarding school policies. The bill creating the Truth and Healing Commission would establish a panel to formally investigate, document, and report on the histories of Indian boarding schools and the systematic and long-term effects of those schools and policies on Native American peoples. The bill passed the Senate last year but stalled in the House of Representatives. The push for the commission is now on the agenda for the current 119th Congress. "As much as anything, we're trying to rebuild some of the trust that has been lost between our federal government and Native communities," Murkowski said. "It's a fragile trust that's under pressure in the current environment of fast-paced budget cuts," Murkowski said. I'm worried that when it comes to our tribal programs and our ability to see them implemented, that the cuts and staffing in these programs will jeopardize our ability to do so and cause damage to that very important trust relationship, she said. It's still too early to determine whether or not these cuts are going to stay in place, she said, adding, I'm not backing down on this. That was, Murkowski says we're not going to let tribal programs suffer. From the AZ Mirror and Shondine Silversmith, published on March 12, 2025, Arizona delegation pushes largest tribal water rate settlement in U.S. history. A settlement that will provide reliable and safe water for the Navajo Nation, the Hopi Tribe, and the San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe has been introduced in Congress, where it must be approved to take effect. This is a historic moment for the Navajo Nation, Hopi Tribe, and San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe, U.S. Senator Mark Kelly, Arizona's Democratic senior senator, said in a press release. After years of hard work and collaboration, we're delivering a water settlement that secures reliable, clean water and strengthens tribal sovereignty. The Northeastern Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement Act of 2025 would ratify and fund the largest Indian water rights settlement in the country, which will secure water rights for the Navajo Nation, Hopi Tribe, and the San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe. Kelly and U.S. Senator Ruben Gallego, Arizona's other senator, introduced the legislation. Identical legislation has been introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives by U.S. Representative Juan Ciscomani, Republican of Tucson, and has been co-sponsored by Representatives Yasemin Ansari, D. Phoenix, Eli Crane, R. Oro Valley, Raul Grijalva, D. Tucson, David Schweikert, R. Scottsdale, and Greg Stanton, D. Phoenix. The agreement will end the three tribes' claims to the main stem of the Colorado River, the Little Colorado River, and relevant groundwater sources in Arizona. The settlement would guarantee the tribes access to over 56,000 acre-feet of Colorado River water with specific groundwater rights and protections. Additionally, the agreement requires the Navajo Nation and Hopi Tribe to leave 17,050 acre feet per year of Arizona Upper Basin water in Lake Powell for the first 20 years. It will also allow the Navajo Nation and the Hopi Tribe to lease a portion of their water rights, providing the tribes a chance to create economic opportunities until local demand is met through new infrastructure. The legislation authorizes $5.1 billion to acquire, build, and maintain essential water development and delivery projects, including a distribution pipeline. For countless generations, Arizona's tribes have been caretakers of the Colorado River, Gallego said in a written statement. But for too long, water rights disputes have prevented them from having full certainty around their water future. With this historic legislation, the Navajo Nation, Hopi Tribe, and San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe will finally get the security and stability they deserve, he added. Governor Katie Hobbs said her administration is proud to support the Northeastern Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement Act, as it will provide clean and reliable water to thousands of indigenous families, address generations of injustice, and promote economic and social progress. For decades, the Navajo, Hopi, and San Juan Southern Paiute tribes have fought for a fundamental human right, access to water, Hobbs said. Navajo Nation Council Speaker Crystalyn Curley said the settlement will secure prosperity for future generations of the Diné, Hopi, and San Juan Southern Paiute people. People doubted the three tribes could unite, Curley said. This dispute was imposed on us, but with something as vital as water at stake, we came together, not for ourselves, but for our children. Curley said that without the settlement, their communities would remain disproportionately vulnerable to diseases and development, and the Navajo Nation would continue to be limited by the lack of water infrastructure. Tens of thousands of Navajo people in Arizona do not have water in their homes, Curley said. The infrastructure funded under the bill secures the necessary water supply that will serve our communities and fund our future generations. Hopi Chairman Tom Nuvanyama echoed Curley's statements and called the settlement's introduction a historic moment. I want to thank our Navajo and San Juan Southern Paiute relatives for setting aside differences, as we did as Hopi, Nuvanyama said. The settlement isn't for us. It's for the sustainability and survival of future generations. It must happen. Nuvanyama said the settlement will ensure the Hopi tribe's water future by providing a reliable water supply and much-needed infrastructure. San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe President Carlene Yellowhair called the settlement a genuinely historic moment for all the tribes because clean running water and home structures are luxuries that their people have gone too long without. This legislation will ensure we have these basic human rights now and into the future, Yellowhair said, adding she's grateful for the Arizona delegation's support of the legislation. In addition to the water allotment and funding, the legislation will formally establish a reservation for the San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe. The tribe will receive 5,400 acres of land within the boundaries of the Navajo Nation. This legislation establishes our homeland, ensures our water rights, and provides for secure infrastructure. San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe Vice President Johnny Lehigh Jr. said, "It's been a long time coming, and we're excited about the new challenges and opportunities that will surely follow." That was Arizona delegation pushes largest tribal water rights settlement in U.S. history. And in news that's recent to me as I'm reading it, though maybe not when you're hearing it, Terry Tang of the Associated Press writes, Pentagon restores Navajo code talkers' histories after outcry. The Pentagon restored some web pages highlighting the crucial wartime contributions of Navajo code talkers and other Native American veterans on Wednesday after tribes condemned the action. The initial removal was part of a sweep of any military content that promoted diversity, equity, and inclusion, commonly referred to as DEI. Following President Donald Trump's broader executive order ending the federal government's DEI programs, the Defense Department deleted thousands of pages honoring contributions by women and minority groups. Department officials say the Navajo Code Talker material was erroneously erased. In the rare cases that content is removed, either deliberately or by mistake, that it's out of the clearly outlined scope of the directive, we instruct the components and they correct the content so it recognizes our heroes for their dedicated service alongside their fellow Americans, period. Pentagon Press Secretary John Oliott said in a statement. Several web pages on the code talkers landed on a 404 page not found message on Tuesday. Some were back up Wednesday, although any that also mention Native American Heritage Month remained down. Thousands of other pages deleted in the DEI purge are still offline. White House officials informed the Navajo Nation that an artificial intelligence powered automated review process looking for content with DEI initiatives led to the elimination of anything mentioning Navajo, according to a statement from Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin. Nigrin, who sent a letter to the Defense Department requesting clarity on the issue, said he's pleased by the resolution. I want to assure the Navajo people we remain in close communication with federal officials to ensure the legacy of our cherished Navajo code talkers is never erased from American and Navajo history, Nigrin said. He also pointed out the 574 federally recognized tribes across the U.S. are sovereign nations and not defined by DEI classifications, a stance broadly supported by other Native American leaders who also sent letters to the Trump administration. The Code Talkers participated in all assaults the Marines led in the Pacific from 1942 to 45 and are credited with helping the U.S. win the war. Hundreds of Native Americans from more than 20 tribes also served as Code Talkers during World War I and World War II, according to the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian. Among them were Choctaw, Cherokee, Osage, Chippewa, and Hopi speakers. The Defense Department has had to issue reassurances it is not omitting historic achievements by servicemen and women of color. Besides the Code Talkers, the agency also on Wednesday restored a webpage describing baseball and civil rights icon Jackie Robinson's military service after it was missing earlier in the day. Last week, pages honoring a Black Medal of Honor winner and a Japanese American service members were also restored. Everyone at the Defense Department loves Jackie Robinson, as well as the Navajo Code Talkers, the Tuskegee Airmen, the Marines at Iwo Jima, and so many others. We salute them for their strong and in many cases heroic service to our country, full stop, Oliott said. We do not view or highlight them through the prism of immutable characteristics such as race, ethnicity, or sex. That was Pentagon Restores Navajo Code Talkers Histories. After Outcry. You're listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been bringing the disabled audio access to print information for over 45 years. Learn how you can support Sun Sounds at our website, sunsounds.org, where you can also listen to our live streams or find individual episodes on demand. You can now also get our app at your usual app stores for both Apple and Android devices. Next up is an article from Rise Magazine, R-I-Z-E. It was published around the 1st of March. Indigenous Futurism Brings Fresh Perspectives to Pop Culture by Luna Reyna. Sadek Caronjes Esquivel is a Canian Quechaca and Mexican indigenous artist and writer whose maternal family resides on the Tiendinaga Mohawk Reserve in Ontario, California. It says California, I'm pretty sure it means Ontario, Canada. And paternal family migrated from Casa Grandes, Mexico. He comes from a family of artists, writers, beaders, painters, and regalia crafters. Esquivel utilizes illustration and gaming to create worlds and stories that promote imaginative futures and possibilities, enhancing Native representation in pop culture. If you can't imagine a future for your people, do you even have one? Esquivel shared. Esquivel looks at indigenous futurism through the lens of what could change, but also what is culturally relevant. Because Native people will continue to be connected to their communities, and that will keep people grounded into the future. I think with indigenous futurism, the thing about it is it's a chance to tell stories through our own lenses without relying on the shared culture that we have right now through colonization, Esquivel said. It's a chance to imagine something different. Esquivel's vision of indigenous futurism doesn't necessarily have to be set in the future. It can be non-linear storytelling, anything that defies the typical narratives we see. One of the things that really bums me out the most is when we see the trauma bombing in so much Native literature and media, Esquivel said. Those projects don't feel like they're made for a Native audience. Because we've already been through it. It feels more like it's informing a non-Native crowd. Killers of the Flower Moon is a perfect example. That movie's incredibly hard to watch as a Native person, because we know that history, we've experienced that history, and it might not be as overtly violent that we can see, but it's still there and it's still happening, and these murders and deaths still happen. We're facing things now, like MMIWP. We live in a world, and I think Indigenous futurism... We live in that world, and I think indigenous futurism gives us a chance to sort of escape from that, and not in a bad way, but in a way that's healing, in a way that gives us an outlet to imagine what should be, and not being restrained. In Esquivel's experience, if the story isn't about native trauma, people have perceived native futurism to be utopian. As an illustrator, he contributed to the Kickstarter hit indigenous science fantasy tabletop role-playing game Coyote and Crow. Because Coyote and Crow is native futurism, a lot of people assumed it was utopian, which is a major misconception. Esquivel stressed that native people had conflicts before settlers arrived. Growing up, he read the Haudenosaunee Great Law of Peace, also known as Kayanere Kowa in Kanien Kehaka, or Mohawk, which is a set of governing principles that established the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, which helped shape the emerging United States governance and democratic principles. The Haudenosaunee Confederacy united a confederation of Native nations governed by their Great Law of Peace. The document is all about consensus building among nations and influenced the development of American democracy after Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson had direct interactions with the Haudenosaunee. There were conflicts that the people were working toward a unified solution to. For Esquivel, this document reads like indigenous futurism. In Esquivel's work as a lead concept artist on the indigenous cyber-noir detective video game Hill Agency Purity Decay, which asks the question, what would our world look like on the brink of freedom from colonial oppression? He was able to reimagine indigenous futures. In this world, the lead character is a two-spirit detective who Esquivel calls a grumpy little old man. This future is a post-ecological disaster and wars. In the wake of all that destruction, a lot of the population left the planet to go find a new planet to colonize. In the world of Hill Agency, the indigenous people have stayed because this is our home. We're not going to abandon it, Esquivel said. The storyline of the game is a reimagining of how to take an abandoned city and rebuild civilization through native values, cultures, and creative vision. In the Hill Agency envisioning, it's an indigenous, more sustainable, and handcrafted world. Looking through my own family photos with some family members, there's tons of photos of family members just suited up in nice outfits, big lapels, hair slicked back, pencil-lined dresses, blouses. They're really nice, all handmade, handcrafted outfits, Esquivel said. That fashion lends itself to this idea that the society is rebuilding itself. There's no fast fashion in this world. You're hand-making everything. So in this world, it makes sense that these kind of old-style, retro-futurism, 1940s noir things are coming back. The three-tiered city in the game is also based heavily on northeastern native peoples like the Cree, Iroquois, Mohawk, and Haudenosaunee. All of the signage in the games is Cree, Esquivel said, and it was sort of like this chance to say, how would we take this place that existed and remake it to fit this cultural resurgence? And we're really trying to show that we're not a wasteful people. We're going to rebuild, reuse all of the buildings in the world. The approach is that it's a matrilineal home for your extended family, so every building is essentially a longhouse, and you have a house mother. So in the game, you see your little auntie, and she's the typical native auntie. She's little, she's a little mean, and she's very sassy, but she loves you. Just that tough love that we're all used to. The game starts with her kicking your character in the butt, metaphorically, telling you to get outside and go look for some stuff. Esquivel is also a comic artist and writer, with work in Moonshot, the Indigenous Comics Collection, Volume 3, and the story Quiet Nights in A Howl, an Indigenous anthology of wolves, werewolves, and rougarou. As a writer, he created character bios for the Water Tribe Legends characters and helped develop a new canon Water Tribe character in the Avatar Legends tabletop role-playing game. He was also the concept artist for the video games Blacklight Retribution, Blacklight Tangled Down, Saw, and Saw 2 Flesh and Blood. Esquivel currently lives in the Duwamish homelands of the greater Seattle area and runs a small business, Rising Suns Media LLC, with his brother Teor Hate. Rising Suns Media art and apparel has everything from futuristic, native-designed leggings to iPhone cases with Esquivel's take on a native Wednesday Addams. Everything in the shop inspires excitement and ignites the imagination about and for native futures. And that was Indigenous Futurism Brings Fresh Perspectives. You've been listening to Native Sun, bringing you news of Indian country on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. Music is Indomitable by DJ Shove.